Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. We hope to have a good, informative and as well entertaining show today for you. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, again, thank you. And Mary, where are we going? Give us the whole lineup.
We are recording this today on September 11th. So we're going to be talking about September 11th and remembering the people that gave their lives that day. We're going to talk about last night's debate. We're going to talk about the Afghanistan withdrawal. We're going to talk about some of the fact-checking in last night's debate, about America's economic vulnerability, and we have some other surprises.
Very good. So 9/11. Let's bring in 9/11. By the way, at that time, now Mary and I were up in Massachusetts, and we did have one daughter that lived down a couple of blocks from the Trade Center in New York City. I'm going to do Mary's story because she was the person that opened the YMCA at 5:30 in the morning and got home at about 8:30 in the morning. And of course, what do you want to say, 9 o'clock or what?
I turned on the TV.
Yeah,
it was a little bit before nine. And immediately on the screen was a picture of an airplane in the middle of a building. And when you see that, your brain doesn't know what to do with it. And I immediately assumed it was a special effect for somebody's action movie coming up. And I started listening and I realized, no, this isn't a special effect. And then the second plane hit. And my first concern was, of course, having a daughter that lived a few blocks from there and having a couple of nephews who worked in the city. And but I had the errands to run, and I went out and ran my errands. And I was in the waiting room at a doctor's office when the buildings fell down. And as Bob said, I was working at the Y, and one of my coworkers' daughters worked in the second tower. And she hadn't heard from her daughter by the end of the day. And after about 2 weeks, she was asked after a couple of days to submit her daughter's hairbrush or something like that. And after about 2 weeks, they confirmed that her daughter, who was 35, was killed in one of the stairwells in the South Tower. Because when the plane hit the first tower, the people in the South Tower were told, oh, it's no big deal, stay there. Except, with the exception of Morgan
Stanley.
Am I right? I think it was Morgan Stanley. It was Rick Rascorla, who was a Vietnam vet. He was a British citizen, and he was the vice president in charge of security for one of the investment companies in the South Tower. And he had enough of an intelligence background and knew enough about Islam to know that when they had failed in the first bombing, that they were going to come back and do it again. So he routinely held evacuation drills with his company. They hated him for it, but he did it. And that day, he got everyone out, and when they got to the bottom and got everybody out, there were three people missing. So he and two other people went in to find those three people, and unfortunately, they were all killed when the buildings collapsed. There were a lot of heroes that day and a lot of people who did extraordinary things, but that's my 9/11 story.
By the way, a quirk on Rick Rascorla, if you folks have seen the movie We Were Soldiers Once, the book We Were Soldiers Once, Mel Gibson was in the movie. But
Mel Gibson and what's the guy with the voice?
That was all about the Battle of Ha Drang, which was November of 1965. And there is an acquaintance of ours, Joe Marm, who lives up in Faro, who was the Medal of Honor recipient from that battle. And another participant in that battle was this same Rick Rascorla.
God saved him for a reason, and a lot of people owe their lives to him on 9/11.
I remember I was at home. I had just gotten a shower, and I was at the computer doing something, and the phone rang, and it was a neighbor telling me the country was under attack and to turn the TV on. I turned the TV on, and then I called Glenn at work and said, "We're being attacked. I'm scared." And you were at work. I don't remember what you said. Do you?
It wasn't anything of significance. I don't have a good story to tie to it other than, obviously, you know, people started talking about what was going on, and everybody was very concerned in the workplace about what was happening.
I remember not understanding why all of a sudden all the planes were grounded. And then when they said, well, there's one plane that we haven't been able to get on the ground, and that was the one that went in at Shanksville. So you know, then it made sense.
You know, we also, again, we lived in Massachusetts at the time, but I grew up in the New York area, and my wife Mary grew up in New Jersey, and we were just becoming aware that where my sister lived in Garden City, and my brother a little further out on the island, and folks in New Jersey, kids couldn't be released from school. They had no idea whether there were any parents to come home to.
The New York City schools did not let the kids out that night because they didn't know if there were going to be parents at home.
Wow. You know, it was such an event that was such a shock, and nobody could have been prepared for it. You know, I remember the images. It will always stay in our minds, I'm sure, that you saw on TV, that people jumping out of the windows in order to avoid the heat and the flame. It's, you know, it's a heck of a choice.
Well, we have people here in New Bern that were there, that were in the Pentagon and were in the place. Tim Mason was in the Pentagon when that happened.
And the sad part about it is that some of the people in the buildings were instructed to go climb up in the building.
Yeah.
Instead of evacuating down. They were instructed, because I guess the idea was that they could control the damage, and the damage was kind of mid-building or perhaps a little below mid-building.
Or evacuate off the roof.
Yeah, perhaps that was. And I don't think anybody really anticipated the degree to which those buildings would just collapse, because once the weight of that floor, one floor weakens, all the rest of the weight drops down. But the thing that bothers me is that there's a tendency, I think, to avoid showing those pictures. And I really think we should not forget those pictures. I think this, when we memorialize this event, I think those images are important for people to see, because there's younger generation, they don't know anything about this. And they should know, because that's the risk we're taking. And here we're importing all these people into this country from places that these terrorists are just running rampant. And we're under that same threat now. Not saying it'll be an airplane attack, but there's certainly many ways to do it. But if that image is erased, or no, we don't face up to it, I think there's a lot of people that are going to minimize what that risk is.
You know, there's a lot of people also that could not understand 343 firefighters going into that building. And actually, they're going into the building with pretty good knowledge. They're not coming back out.
I remember what I was doing. I was exercising using a videotape, because we were still using VHS back then. And I got a call from, I was living in Raleigh at the time, and I got a call from Dallas, from a girl who was my roommate when I was in the military station in Berlin. And she said, "Turn on the TV." And I said, "What?" She goes, "Turn on the TV. Just do it. Turn on the TV." And I turn on the TV just in time to see the second plane hit the tower. And then she and I stayed on the phone. It was my 50th birthday, by the way. And I thought, I'm supposed to have a black birthday for 50, but this is a little beyond the pale here. And she and I stayed on the phone the rest of the day, you know, watching Fox News and basically crying all day. And so I was so anxious to be able to do something that I called Red Cross for 3 days trying to make an appointment to go give blood. And when I finally got down there, they wouldn't take mine because I was stationed in Germany in 1981. They thought I might get mad cow disease.
Well, happy birthday, Pat.
Yeah, today's my birthday. I'm 74.
We're not going to sing to you.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, Pat, along with that, when there were the rescue dogs that came in to the pile, I guess is what they gave it the name of the pile. But the rescue dogs came in and they all had to have like asbestos mittens or whatever else because the pile was hot. But how do you psychologically help a dog that is there to find survivors when there are no survivors?
We met one of those dogs and its owner at the Big E, which is the New England State's Fair, a year or so afterwards. And the handler was explaining that the dog was depressed because they're used to going in and finding survivors, and there just weren't any.
Well, I wake up at night worrying about the dogs that we left behind in Afghanistan. All the handlers, all those dogs, we left them.
Yeah.
And nothing, you know, think of the routine that those dogs had and the care and the feeding and the bond with their handler. And there they are running around out there waiting for some Afghani to eat them.
Ugh.
I think if I was the handler, I would have been hard-pressed to get on the plane.
Well,
I mean, it's just.
But it was your life if you didn't.
I'm a dog person.
I am too.
Every time I think of that, it just hurts my heart.
Well, I always say I like my dogs are my favorite people. And then my husband says, yeah, but he doesn't crap on the floor.
Yet. As they say on Simpson, yet.
I think we need to move on.
in all remembrance of the folks that did lose their life that day and others that were working in a heroic rescue situation up against great odds. And again, you look at a couple of the fire stations downtown New York or whatever else, and there's a couple of actors now that were firemen around that time, or at least came back to be firemen and pick up some
Steve
of the slack.
Buscemi. Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi was a firefighter,
Fargo, yeah.
And he came back. He came back to pick up the slack, and again, it's a remembrance.
And remember the people that were in that area afterwards that were told it was safe and are paying serious
health problems
now.
Okay. And I know we do have an upcoming topic that ties into this, you know, with the people that signed up to go fight the evil that was behind this.
Okay. Yes.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for staying with us.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Again, glad you can stay with us. We're going to head off to, Afghanistan, I think?
The House Foreign Affairs Committee has released its report on the Biden-Harris administration's withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021.
So, where are we going to go?
Well, I think it was the biggest military disgrace of our country's history was the withdrawal, was chaos, to be blunt.
You think it was worse than Saigon?
I don't know about Saigon.
When we left Vietnam?
Oh, okay. Well,
fall of Saigon?
That was pretty bad, too.
Because a lot of people do think it was worse than the fall of Saigon.
Well, we left more stuff behind in Afghanistan than we did in Saigon. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't leave whole fields of,
I would like to interject that in my perspective, being just a little bit younger than you, Pat, is I think that the TV, the internet, the social media, the direct knowledge, I think that having the impact immediately as it's happening really impacted me in a more severe way than looking at a photograph in a book.
Well, if you were a little bit older, you could watch it on TV.
Yeah.
It was filmed. It was televised. There was a big line up to the helicopters on top of that building, and people remember that?
Yes.
Yes. But
yeah.
There was one difference, I think, was the exit from Vietnam was under pressure. In other words, the North Vietnamese army was continuing to assault South Vietnam and our forces. So it was an evacuation that was done under the pressure of a military action by the enemy. In Afghanistan, that was not the case. Trump had settled it down. There were no mortalities of American soldiers. So we had plenty of opportunity to do it the right way. And it could have been done the right way. And obviously it was bungled. And, leaving behind $85 billion worth of the most sophisticated military equipment, I mean, that's totally unheard of. Because after World War II, we had military supplies. We either brought them back or destroyed them. One or the other. You don't leave it for the enemy.
Well, the equipment's bad enough, but it's the people we left behind.
The translators and the people who had worked with us.
Americans? We left Americans behind?
That the Afghan government was immediately going to go after and torture and execute.
And as you had mentioned earlier, I mean, even the dogs that we knew that were guard dogs
search dogs.
The search dogs and everything that we knew were trained to take care of people now.
They left them all behind.
Yeah.
Well, I find it extremely disturbing that the people responsible for those decisions, it was an arbitrary date based on the fact that it was 9/11 and they were trying to make a political statement, even though the administration had been advised by other military intelligence not to do so on that day, that they were not ready to do it. They went ahead anyway, and there was a lot of lack of communication is probably being generous, but it was a complete failure, and it was meant to be for optics. It was not tactical.
But and unfortunately, we have somebody named Harris running for president who thinks that that withdrawal was just fine.
Yeah.
And in spite of the fact that, like you said, Kim, the military officials were advising against doing it the way they wanted to do it. And Biden said, no, we're going to end it. And what did Harris say? She was the, quote, the last person
in the room,
indicating that, I guess, that she had sway on the decision and that it wasn't for her supporting it, it might not have happened. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, now they're trying to blame the whole thing on Trump.
Did I read today that the they're giving all the 13 people that died, they're giving them congressional gold medals?
I don't know. Maybe that's to try to make up for everything that's been done.
I don't know. But last night, just at for a token of interest, we had Stuart Schiller, who was Lieutenant Colonel, who was court-martialed because he went on social media in uniform to describe his experience with the military hierarchy and complain about them. And he was court-martialed, put in jail for a period of time. He lost his commission. He lost his retirement. He basically lost everything. But he was our speaker last night at our precinct meeting, and he's got a book out called Crisis of Command: How He Lost Trust and Confidence in America's Generals and Politicians. But one of the interesting things that he said was that the military leaders, the generals, they are not in positions because of merit. They are in the positions they are in because of their bosses liked them. They were the butt kissers.
Political schmoozing, yes.
Yeah. And I think that's typical in a lot of organizations. The military is not unique, but it's unfortunate because the decisions that they take or should be making should be based on courage and a rational assessment of the facts.
Merit.
One of the things I wanted to just mention was Glenn said a few minutes ago, that after the attack on 9/11, there was a big surge of recruitment. People were volunteering to join the military in order to defend the country. What we're seeing now is the direct opposite. And part of that, I'm not saying it's only due to the Afghanistan withdrawal, but there's been like a 30% decrease in the number of recruits coming into the Army, for example. Right now, the Army is 450,000 men and women. And that's the lowest it's been since before World War II. China, on the other hand, their armed forces are 2.2 million people.
Isn't everybody in China required to have military service?
In China?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether they do or they don't. But the outcome is, the point being, we are totally outmanned if we ever came to any kind of a struggle that required us to get involved. Okay?
You know, I'd also add to that there's a lot of reports on the substandard housing that's now available for the military, that it's not being taken care of. The on-base or the near-base housing that's being controlled by or
well, that's one thing, Bob, but it's the forever wars.
The forever.
It's where we're sending people on a whim and then screwing it up.
Yeah.
And people die. And they're like, part of the recruitment problem has been from military families who've had military in their family for generations, who are telling their sons, don't go in the military today, because it's not an honorable institution anymore. It's woke. It's full of transgenders and gay people and pronouns, and it's broken.
Going back to Eisenhower with his caution on his, his farewell speech or whatever else, it was the concern about the military-industrial complex just taking over the the wars, because they don't care where you're fighting a war. As long as you're fighting a war, they have to make equipment. They have to make the weapons. They have to make the bombs, whatever else. Sure. And their profit is in making bombs. It's not in winning wars.
I want to go back to another aspect of the withdrawal and the fact that this was done over the objection of our NATO allies. Now, one of the claims made in the debate last night was that our allies did not like or respect Donald Trump. Well, how do our allies feel when their advice is ignored and Biden, for the sake of a PR stunt, does that disastrous withdrawal? I mean, what did that do to our standing in NATO?
Well, prior to the withdrawal, according to Stuart Schiller yesterday, there had been the release of 7,000, what do you call the prisoners of war, like prior to the evacuation. And so you had all of those insurgents coming back against our troops as they were trying to evacuate. And he's pretty certain that the bomber was one of the
released prisoners.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and this business about the recruitment, I just wanted to just add one item. What the data has shown is the impact of, as we mentioned, DEI and all this woke ideology. Combine that with the mandatory vaccine requirement. Then you have the discouragement of how Afghanistan was handled. And what they're finding is that the biggest group that's had the biggest impact on are white males. Mm-hmm. Their recruitment is down almost 50%, 46% or so over what traditionally it was.
And what do they think it is for? Why?
DEI.
Part of it is DEI, and I think part of it is getting away from the warrior ideology, psychological, okay? You come in and you're going to defend your country. You're there to fight. You're there to display your courage and so on. The military is not like that. They diminish that.
Yeah.
If you are too, quote, manly,
toxic,
you don't fit in anymore. And therefore, we have military. And then you add to that, you put women into combat roles, which again diminishes the camaraderie that it takes to be in the military.
So that they've turned the military into a social experiment.
Well, they finally completed it.
They've been trying it for decades. They finally completed it. Now it's broken.
But I don't know how they intend to ever have women on the front line. I know that there are military women pilots and that type thing. But when I think about how many times I have to go to the bathroom and during the day, there is no way I could be on the front line. No way.
Thank you for that insight.
Excuse me, I need to go to the ladies' room.
But I'm seriously, what are you going to do? Say, time out, I got to go to the bathroom. I mean, you can't do that.
You can't even pee in a bottle.
No, it's not fair.
There are all kinds of issues with this.
Actually, I think on the battlefield, that's the least of your worries.
Yeah, your body's clenching up, and all the urine is going back up.
Well, that was a rabbit hole.
And thank you for that.
Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for staying with us. This is the CCT8 Wake Up Call Show. Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in Newbern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in Newbern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, Newbern.
Welcome back, and thank you for staying with our sponsors and supporters. Now, we're going to head off to, we're recording this on Wednesday, and the debate was last night. And so where do we want to go with the debate?
I didn't watch it.
Oh, my goodness. I think it was one of the biggest setups I've seen in a long time. I have watched Kamala on multiple different video segments where she can't string a sentence together, much less paragraphs, much less 20 paragraphs. And I just find it difficult to accept that she did not have the questions in advance. I think that she was very well coached. She came off very informed. And I've never seen her informed before, other than lipstick on a Starbucks lid. That was a lot of really good information. But she told a lot of lies, but she told them very convincingly. She got under Trump's skin, and his ego would not allow him not to be defensive. So I think she won that battle. I was upset with Trump that he was more concerned about her comment about people leaving his rallies than he was arguing about the withdrawal from Afghanistan. I thought if I didn't know nothing and I wasn't educated at all, that I would have probably looked at it and said, yeah, she won. That's my opinion.
Interestingly enough, I don't think she had the questions in advance, but I think she had a list of talking points that she memorized, because her answers were not necessarily related to the question. And when they asked her, the question for this election is, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And when they asked her that, she totally ignored the question and said she grew up in a middle-class family. Well, her father was a college professor, and her mother was a research scientist. Now, that doesn't sound very middle class to me.
But they were divorced, and so that's where she says that she ended up in the middle class family, because it was a single mother with two daughters.
If you're a research scientist, you're making good money. I'm not buying that.
Yeah. And she grew up in Canada.
Yes. She did not grow up in the slums of anywhere.
Well, I think that I watched the whole thing. And I believe that Trump did okay with staying on topic. There was a lot of things that he brought up, that it was some times when he allowed himself to get distracted. I agree with you, Kim, and that's typical Trump. He does not over-prepare for anything. He didn't go in like Harris did with a lot of pre-memorized, pre-scripted answers that she just fit in at the appropriate time. Okay, but having said that, I think he did make some good points. I think he could have done better was he did not elaborate on how her objectives, how her platform, how her, quote, plan, unquote, which is just emerging, by the way, that he could have, I think, made it clearer that what she is recommending is Marxist socialist. It's transferring money from the hardworking taxpayer to people who don't deserve it or haven't earned it. Like the $6,000 is going to be given to people who have a child. That's fine. But where's it coming from? It's coming from somebody else who's working. Okay. Second thing is the $25,000 that she brought up that's going to be given to first home buyers. Where's that coming from? It's coming from other people that are working.
Including people that don't have a house.
And the $50,000 that she's going to credit the people's businesses. My point is that these things are part of a socialist Marxist agenda where the government gets in power by giving free stuff to other people. And that's exactly what she's doing, and that's how they try to seduce people. That's how all socialist governments work. They present these ideas of, you vote for us, you're going to get all this free stuff. There isn't any free stuff. It comes from other people. And I think that's where he could have made, I think, a better point about her Marxist background.
I'm taking a little bit different slant on it. And I think for sure, in my mind, Kamala won the debate. But did they swing voters? And that's the second part of the question. Did how the debate go swing voters to their position or not? And most of the commentary on it is they don't think many voters got moved by the debate.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Yeah.
Let's hope that people make decisions who they vote on by the person's actions and so on.
And accuracy.
Not the outcome of some scripted debate.
Yeah. Well, Kamala set up the debate by saying, okay, people, listen to me. He's going to be telling you a bunch of lies tonight. Everything he's going to say is going to be a lie. And she prefaced just about everything with a lie.
Yes.
But it was her that was lying. And that's how she got under his skin in the beginning. But she was talking about that, the Heritage Foundation Project 25.
2025.
Right. That Trump has absolutely nothing to do with. And she brought it up. He said, no, I don't have anything to do with that. I've never read it. She brought it up at least two more times after that. My point is the uninformed or the uneducated are going to hear that, and they're just going to hear he's lying, she's lying, and they're not going to know where either one stands.
Two points of control that I know she had. One, she did not cackle.
Oh, yeah.
Pardon my friend.
She didn't.
She didn't laugh/cackle throughout the whole
evening. She did make faces.
She made faces, but faces, if you go back to the was it the Nixon-Kennedy debates or whatever, who watched it, who listened to it. So she did not fall into that trap. Secondly, anytime, Kim, as you were saying, she would preface with a lie, and those lies were not challenged at all by the moderators. The moderators did challenge Trump on certain things, and they were 100% wrong when they did challenge him.
I have a list, if you will excuse the shameless plug. It was posted on Right Wing Granny
today. Just tell us what the list is.
The article is called The Lies Kept on Coming. It's a list that I got from Breitbart. I'm not going to read the whole list because the whole list is 21 lies long, but I'll give you the first 10. The Very Fine People hoax. That's even been debunked by Snopes. Project 2025 hoax. The false claims on the Trump trade deficit. The claim that Trump told Putin he could do whatever he wanted. The claim that Trump would be a dictator. Blaming the botched Afghanistan withdrawal on Trump. Trump would allow Putin to be sitting in Kiev. The bloodbath hoax that Trump said there would be a bloodbath if he wasn't elected, or that's not what he said. The fact that Trump would do a national ban on abortion, that's a lie. And the charge that Trump was a racist in rental property. Now, I just want to go with that last one for just a second. When Trump opened Mar-a-Lago in Florida, he literally fought City Hall to allow Jews and blacks to join Mar-a-Lago. He was given awards in New York City for the things he did to promote racial harmony. The man is not a racist. He's an egotist, and he's a lot of other things.
Hang on one second.
He's not a racist.
Hang on one second. Footnote that. He was given awards when he was a Democrat.
That's true. That is true. But there's a whole list. And I saw another article. I've evidently missed one. Evidently, there's a 22nd lie. I don't know what it is.
Well, the fact checkers never checked anything she said. And the things that Trump said that could have easily been discounted were not. So, like many of the people are saying today, it was 3-1.
Yes, it
was. For
sure.
And now they're saying, when's the next debate going to be?
Well, you know, it just shows that truth is not a left-wing Marxist value. They will say anything that works in their favor. And unfortunately, I guess you could look at it and say, well, the conservatives, Republicans generally, try not to lie. I think there's more truth. I'm not saying politicians aren't subject to falsehoods, and, you know, it's just seems to be part of the makeup. But Trump, I believe, and I think this is pretty well documented, he says what he believes and he does what he says he's going to do. And he does not come up with now he might come out and say, well, you know, this person's like Rocket Man. He might use some term to kind of describe the person. But I'm not aware of him wholesale lying about somebody.
Well,
but this is what they're dealing with. Now they're asking him, do you want to do another debate? Now, if he does the debate under the same circumstances with another left-wing Democrat network and moderators, what's he going to get? He's going to get similar outcome. Now, if he went on something like Fox or Newsmax or something like that with reliable conservative moderators, I think it probably would work, would help him. But
I want to see him on Fox with Mark Levin as the narrator, the moderator. I think that.
And Ben Shapiro.
Judge Judy.
We all have our own ideas as to how that would work.
Well, Trump said he would do another debate on Fox, but not with Bret Baier or Martha McCallum.
That makes sense.
Well, I think the whole thing was really exhausting to watch. I felt like Trump came off thin-skinned and unprepared, and Kamala came off very informed and very forthright, even when she was lying. I just... Glenn and I both sat there yelling at the TV the whole time we were watching it, and I just am concerned about the uninformed and uneducated. To reiterate that, people need to do their own homework. Are you better off today? Are you spending less money at the grocery store, at the gas station? How long are you having to wait to get into your doctor's office ever since Obamacare, ever since COVID, and the people leaving the medical industry? It's crazy.
Yes, it has been a problem, and it was very frustrating to hear the things that you knew were lies, and the fact checkers were only interested in fact checking Trump. They did not fact check Kamala, even on the things that Snopes has already proved that were untrue.
And he didn't attack Kamala on her role in the administration. He didn't push her on the border czar. He didn't push her on not being there. He didn't push her on not being interviewed for 50 whatever days since she's announced candidacy. If she's such a good speaker, such an eloquent, knowledgeable person, why are they hiding her in a basement?
And what about the flip-flops? Taking away guns, the whole thing.
Well, we do know how she feels about plastic straws.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
God and Country Christian Alliance's 31st annual God and Country Banquet is scheduled for Monday, September 16th at the Havelock Tourist and Event Center. Our keynote speaker is Mr. John Rustett of North Carolina Family Policy Council. Tickets are $30 each or $225 for a table of eight. Sponsorships are also available. Visit our website, godandcountrync.org, to purchase tickets. God and Country Christian Alliance's mission is to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern, to restore to all levels of government the Judeo-Christian values upon which the nation was founded, and to encourage and activate pro-family voters. To learn more about us, visit godandcountrync.org. We look forward to seeing you on September 16th. This year, we also have a silent auction. The doors will open at 5:30 p.m., with the program starting promptly at 6:30 p.m. Check us out at godandcountrync.org.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown Newbern. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
CCTA Wake Up Call airs Saturday at 6 a.m., some days at 11 a.m., and 8 p.m. on WTKF 107.1.
Welcome back, folks, and thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters again. Pat, you—I think you—I cut you off first off on a comment about the straw.
You did cut me off because—and this will be the last comment I make about the debate—is that we were so anxious to learn her position on the plastic straw. This is how silly her campaign has been. One of the few campaign stances that we've been able to discover.
A definite stance.
You know, yes. I'm for fracking. I'm against fracking. Well, she was against plastic straws, and now she's back in favor of plastic straws. And I, for one, am in favor of plastic straws. So I just wanted to give her a little tout there, where plastic straws may be safe.
Maybe safe
for the future, which is good, because those like in California that wanted to get rid of plastic straws, they went to paper straws. They don't work that well.
They don't work well.
No, they don't.
And there's something that Trump could have used. He could have said in his open, do you want the United States to be like California? Mm-hmm. Then vote for Harris. Mm-hmm. If you want the United States to be free and have the things that we're traditionally used to having, then vote for me. Because that's what we've become. We've become another California. And the people leaving California, anybody that can, has got any sense, they're leaving. Yeah.
Well, also, you're talking about banning plastic straws. Have you looked at what the streets of San Francisco look like? Plastic straws are the least of their worries.
Okay, Pat.
Change.
Let's segue to another topic. How about that? How about Cherokee Tribe start selling recreational marijuana in North Carolina?
When did this happen?
Let's see. They began selling it to any adult 21 or over starting Saturday at its tribe-owned dispensary in North Carolina. They first started off only selling it to members of the tribe. And now if you come on to their nation, the tribal lands, you can buy it, whether you're a member of the tribe or not.
I wonder what that's going to mean when you go into any of the casinos. Are they going to be smoking pot?
But what happens? I mean, you go in there and you buy your pot. Are you expected to smoke it on the grounds?
Well, they're their
own
nation.
What happens if you take it off and you get stopped?
That's not their concern. They're just selling it.
But maybe the flip side of the coin will be, I don't like the idea of the recreational pot, period. But if they have it on the Cherokee lands, maybe the Cherokee lobbyists will get involved and say to our senators, Mr. Berger, we don't want to compete with our Indians here. Let's not do marijuana in the rest of the state. That might help us.
And, you know, I don't care what you do, their marijuana won't get taxed.
not by Cherokee.
No, I just wonder how that works when you've got a little enclave where it's legal, surrounded by areas where it's not.
Well, it'd be like buying pot in Amsterdam where it's legal and driving it into Germany where perhaps it's not. I mean, it's crossing a national border.
So if you don't get caught, it doesn't matter.
Well, how many people have gone to tribal nations to buy untaxed cigarettes?
South Carolina for fireworks.
For fireworks, okay. And people do that on an everyday basis, and then they come back with these fireworks that, quote, are illegal in North Carolina. But guess what? They have them. And the same thing's going to happen with what we see here.
And it may very well be, Bob, that this will bring up, this will become a test. How much independence are these American tribal, quote, nations, unquote, are going to have? For example, what if they started just legalizing heroin and they were manufacturing fentanyl and selling it? What point, where is the dividing line? Where is the line in which they are not independent countries? They're not. They're part of our country. They have independent rights that some of the other communities don't have. But this may be a test, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes, because I'd be shocked if this is not challenged.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the crime rate in that area, and that would be a test as well.
Well, Oregon, you know, legalized hard drugs, and then crime exploded, overdose deaths exploded, and so they've just now changed the law, so now hard drugs are illegal again. So I would suspect that if Oregon can do it, the nation of Cherokee can decide that hard drugs are legal.
Well, Oregon essentially illustrates the concept that our founding fathers had of each state as a laboratory. And if you try something in a state that doesn't work, then you don't want the other states copying it. Unfortunately, I wouldn't make any bets on, say, California not trying to do the same thing, because California's out of its mind. But Oregon proved that when you legalize hard drugs, crime goes up.
Well, you know,
and deaths go up.
Yes.
Yeah, and take this going back to last night's debate. I'm sorry to bring it back up, but not really sorry. But again, the abortion issue, it is not a federal issue. It is a states' right issue. It is not a constitutional issue, one way or the other, either in support or in prevention of. It's a states' rights issue, and so. To the point that you just said with Oregon, when you keep it within a state, it's relatively easy to bring it in and then take it out in competition with the other 49 states. So we're right now in with Cherokee, we're in an experimental place where a portion of this state has made a change that will affect a lot of people in that area and maybe people all around the state. But we've got to watch and see how big that change is.
Right. I didn't know where Cherokee is, and you told me it's in the little tip.
The western tip of the state.
Tip of the state. And I'm expecting that means there's small communities there.
Well, it's a big casino. It used to be a small community, but it's a big casino now.
Big casino.
At the bottom end of the Skyline Drive or
Robert.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what would be the effect of everybody in the state of North Carolina who wants to legally purchase marijuana driving to Cherokee?
Well, that's how it's been for years and years. If anybody wanted to go gamble in North Carolina, you went to Cherokee. So it's a destination for a thing. It'll be an economic indicator.
You're also right on a border there of Tennessee and West Virginia. I don't know. But it's also close enough to the border, so you're going to get people coming in from other states, which could also be interesting.
And you know what? As the state, and we look at our Senate was pushing, the head of the Senate was pushing to legalize marijuana in a certain Well, first off, legalize casinos in certain areas, and legalize marijuana also as a
medical
marijuana as an additional issue. But those where they were going to legalize the casinos were areas that the whole area is going to get affected by this influx of a whole different class. I'm not saying class of people is not right saying, but again, the casino gamblers have nothing in common with the area that's there.
The areas were very rural.
A very rural area, and all of a sudden you're going to have a big influence. Now, I'm going to jump quickly to what's the name of the town in Ohio that had 50,000 people. They have 50,000 people in the town, or 59,000, and all of a sudden 20,000 immigrants. That's one-third of the population increase with nothing in common socially, economically, or
culturally.
Or culturally.
Language.
Language. And all of a sudden, the whole profile of the town has changed.
And they are eating the geese.
They are eating the
geese. I want to correct myself. North Carolina, that part of North Carolina, is very close to the Tennessee border and the Virginia border. So those two states are going to be impacted too.
It's also close to Alabama. If you look just west of there. But getting what you're saying, Bob, about this this immigration issue, or illegal immigration, that's what those people were. They're all illegal.
The Haitians are not illegal, Alan.
Because they made them legal or special, they give them special compensation to get them
in.
That's what the Biden administration's done. Technically, they would have been illegal the way they've been flooding in here.
Well, they came under some safe harbor indicators, which,
yeah.
Which is political, but I'm just saying they weren't a caravan like what we've seen come in out of Mexico. We brought them here.
It's hard to caravan across the sea.
Well, that's true, too.
We are going down the same road Europe has gone down, and they're a little further down than we are. Because they're experiencing a lot of these kinds of same issues with bringing people in whose culture is dramatically different than yours. Like Sweden has experienced a tremendous increase in crime, particularly violent crime, rapes, gangs, and so on. And Sweden used to be a place that you would consider that's a fairly safe and controlled, disciplined country. That's no longer the case. And the other countries in Europe are also experiencing the same thing. And, you know, it turns out that these people that are coming into these countries, they don't want to blend. They don't want to blend in with the cultures they're going to. They live in separate groups. Some of them refuse to speak the language of that country. And that's what we're experiencing. And it's only going to get worse.
Don't let the cat out. Don't let the cat out. This
woof,
is Glenn. Meow, 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 meow.
But it would be interesting to find the history behind the who and the how that the Haitians got there.
Yes.
Was it, you know, the 2 a.m. airplane bringing people in?
And they showed up in a group. I mean, in a blanc, like...
Right. Now, what the videos that have gone viral on Facebook are people speaking to their city council members about their circumstance, their interest, their experience.
Yeah.
This is not an I heard or I read on Facebook. It's a video of people talking what they experienced.
Yeah. Well, the childless cat ladies better watch out for their cats.
Amen.
Okay. Do we have any other quick thing to fit in? No, we don't. Well, we do have to fit in one other thing. Tuesday evening, we're going to be meeting over at Stanley Hall Ballroom, and we have a guest speaker, a special guest speaker. I have to talk about a special guest speaker talking there on terrorism. Now, the guest speaker has an alternate name known as Right Wing Granny. Okay, I'm going to give a plug for you. She happens to be sitting next to me, so...
And happens to be your wife.
Happens to be my wife. So folks, Tuesday, Stanley Hall Ballroom, 7 o'clock. If you need to, park behind the City Hall. Anything after 5 o'clock, you can park there in any of the spots. You have a wonderful day. This is CCTA Wake Up Call Show.
CCTA Wake-Up Call airs Saturday at 6 a.m., some days at 11 a.m., and 8 p.m. on WTKF 107.1.